We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Thanks for listening to Dusty and Cam podcast, brought to you on the fan by your local Les Schwab Tire Center. Doing the right thing since 1952.
Would I rather be feared or loved? Easy, both. I want people to be afraid of how much they love me.
This is Dusty and Cam in the morning.
Come on, guys. Early worm gets the worm.
Another worm? Like, are they friends?
This early bird gets the worm.
With Dusty Hera.
That kid probably needs to be punched in the face.
In an ideal world, I would have all 10 fingers on my left hand, so my right hand could just be a fist for punching.
And NFL veteran Cam Cleland.
Who wants some man meat?
I do. I want some man meat.
No, I'm not a meat gazer.
Dusty and Cam on 1080.
He's like the Lone Ranger and I'm like Tonto. And it's not like there was the Lone Ranger and Tonto and Bonto.
The Fan.
All right, hour number two, Dusty and Cam in the morning. Sports are returning. We talked a little bit about high school sports being back in the state of Iowa. And doesn't it feel in your mind like the sports landscape has changed so much as it pertains to college football and the, like, we are having this conversation. Do we think college football will be going on? That was only a couple of weeks ago, remember, that it was like, will college football happen? It seems like in the last couple of weeks, it has changed from, yes, college football is happening, to fans are going to be in the stands during Pac-12 football as well, or any college football this season. There's a growing more and more sentiment that, hey, these schools are going to be able to have fans in the stands in some form or fashion during college football season.
Yeah, I think so too. I've always kind of felt that college football, remember at the beginning of this, I came out with some big decree. It's like, no, football's too big to fail, because not just for the right of viewership, it's just financially it's too big to fail. It's a massive bank, it's a massive revenue, but it's also an outlet. But for all these universities, it means everything. It means the funding, it means so much just for the community, and it means for the school. The camaraderie, the excitement, the pageantry, the passion of what it means for everybody. And I know everyone attacked the Pac-12 because they were last to react. Mm-hmm. And California wanted to say, we're shutting it all down. And it got attacked. And we all looked at it and went, oh, my gosh, Pac-12 is – remember we were discussing moving games to the spring? What kind of crazy stuff is that? Really? The spring? And so it's going to happen.
Well, that was something that, you know, it was like – pump the brakes on it. The fact, here's where the Pac-12 really got people panicked, is that they weren't really saying anything at the beginning. Like, you had Greg Sankey of the SEC come out. You had Bob Boolsby, who I don't think he's turned down a single interview since this whole thing started. And they've been visible and vocal about the Pac-12. And Larry Scott in the Pac-12 was way more measured. It was kind of by necessity that they needed to be, because if you looked at, you know, two of the states in the Pac-12 footprint, California and Washington, they were getting hit really hard by coronavirus. And it was kind of we heard it even here in Oregon. It was a non-starter with a lot of our government officials in the West Coast states, because of the fact that, look, they were focused on bigger things. They weren't going to come out and address it because it was in the back of their minds. Well, as time is gone on in a couple of weeks, we've seen Larry Scott has come out and he's been more vocal about, hey, we're gonna do everything we can. And it's a more measured approach. And that's always what the Pac-12 has been. Mm-hmm. Fans just wanted some sort of assurance that everything was going to be okay, and they just...
Well, there's no such thing.
Yeah, they couldn't give it to him.
Well, there's no assurance of anything. There's no promises, there's no guarantees, there's nothing. Because at this point, there is... Nobody can predict what's going to happen tomorrow, much less 3 months down the road.
There was an encouraging article up at Oregon Live yesterday with Nick Daschle, Oregonian. He did a sit-down with Scott Barnes, and just talking about, like, the budgetary constraints that are happening. And we've talked about, you know, schools like Oregon State and Washington State, they're different from a funding standpoint. And, you know, he was talking about how their budget is about $84 million. And as of right now, they are focusing on, you know, scenarios and models for football home games this fall that do have fans in the stands. And I thought it was pretty interesting, whether it's going to be like a quarter full or whatever it may be. He said students are going to be a part of that and season ticket holders are going to be a part of it. He can make no promises about individual game sales. But what I found fascinating is they're focusing on 50% capacity is what kind of, if Oregon State doesn't hit 50% capacity there for football games, it's going to be a big hit to their athletic budget.
Yeah, it's going
to
be a loss.
The half-full stadium is what they're trying to model. And right now, the conversation has shifted from, all right, is it going to happen, to can we get to a point where we can have half of our fans in the stands to then salvage our break-even budget?
Well, let's hope so. It's just that you don't have enough revenue here, TV-wise, to be able to make the support case. So, yeah, it's probably going to happen. Yeah, 50%. It'd be nice to get 25%. It'd be nice to get enough you can have in there, and you can support the – but you're just going to operate at a loss. At this point, you're just – everyone's digging down deep and trying to figure this one out. But you got to get back on the field. You got to do whatever you can.
And it is kind of the – I mean, we all know why it's this way, because they have unpaid labor. But it is refreshing to have one of the major sports in our country that isn't fighting about how much money is going to be lost for between the, you know, the players and the owners. You know, the whole unpaid labor thing is a whole different can of worms that's going to be opened up in the coming years.
Well,
but
if you came out and every university came out to every coach across the country and said, you got to take 50% pay cut, you'd see a big change.
Yep.
You'd see a very low. Now, I'm not saying that there'd be a faction of coaches out there, but if you told Nick Saban, Nick, we're taking $5 million, and or if you told Coach Cristobal, I don't know what Coach Cristobal makes, 4-3 somewhere, and said, you got to take 1.5, you got to take your budgets and do that, how many coaches would willingly do it, and how many would be probably not and fight for it, because they have agents. They all have agents, and then they got all of that stuff. I'm not advocating for that. What I'm just trying to say is that there's money out there to help support it, and if you're all in, someone will try to figure it. There's this hidden war chest, or there's something out there that everybody, and maybe universities like Oregon, is like, you kind of think that there's this magic war chest hidden. Did they bury gold somewhere in Corvallis?
They did.
It's like, oh, suddenly you're just going to, you can make up the difference. Don't worry about it. No, you can't.
Yeah.
How do you find it? Donors? How are you going to find it if you don't have the television
that revenue, shortfall,
if you don't have the ticket,
that shortfall of money?
Yeah, where does it come from?
And that's going to be the thing, is you're going to see a big separation from programs if that is the case. Yeah, that's right. It is going to come down to donors again. But that is the big separating factor between the haves and the have-nots is, you know, one is conference television deals, but then it goes down to booster money and who's funding your program and opening up their pocketbooks. It should not be of surprise that in that Daschle article, Scott Barnes said football accounts for 75% of the athletics budget. That is the number that you were talking about with football being too big to fail. 75% of the annual athletic department budget comes from football.
I don't think that's a surprise to anybody.
No, it shouldn't be, but it is.
I would have guessed it's more along the lines of 95%.
Yeah.
75 seems kind of reasonable.
Then you take, you know, donations is another part, right? And then you have your basically the NCAA basketball tournament. That is that's the other the other 25% is coming from those two things right there. But we're talking about the shift in the way that people are thinking, and Larry Scott not talking, the Pac-12 not talking about what their plan was. Larry Scott did an interview with 24/7 Sports yesterday, and the quietness of the Pac-12 doesn't mean that they weren't working, because they are the first to unveil what it will look like when the athletes do return to campus.
There are some Pac-12 guidelines that do mandate that all student athletes are tested when they come back to campus, as well as regular testing beyond that. I think at the moment it'll be weekly testing for the reason you mentioned. You know, just having symptoms, we've learned, is not an indicator. So taking someone's temperature or going through a checklist, which they'll do daily anyway to look for symptoms. But there is some data I've heard from our experts that there's kind of 3 or 4 days of I'm learning a lot through this process, something called virus shedding.
Yeah,
that happens,
yeah.
Which is when, you know, your others can catch it from you. That happens before you even show symptoms. So the idea of checking, you know, if you follow that logic, the idea of checking symptoms, it's too late. If you got a symptom, you've probably been infectious a few days before that. So for that reason and others, there will be testing. There's also going to be antibody testing for all student athletes when they come back for a couple of reasons. First and foremost, if you've had the virus, there's a heightened level of concern, cardiac, lung, and there's going to be other screenings and protocols for the, you know, if you might have some antibody, that would be good to know as well.
So they're going to have a weekly testing program throughout the Pac-12. And we know with kind of what we've learned about the tests and the price ranges of what they're gauging, you know, that for the Pac-12 to do that, you're looking at, for the full season, a couple million bucks.
I don't know the cost. Do you know the cost off the top of your head?
Well, we talked about it yesterday. At $125 a pop is what the NHL is going through. You know, that's what the NHL is going to be paying for their tests, and they're going to test daily.
How many student athletes usually per student? I mean, you're looking at 85. I mean, you're roughly probably close to 400 student athletes at a Pac-12 school.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot, man.
Dude, where's the...
But is that just for the return of football and then in July, the basketball programs? Because remember, it's going to be a phased return for each sport. And, you know, at some point, do they need to do that? I don't know, but...
You know, there's a lot of concern for the athletes. From what statistics are saying, the concern should be more for the staff.
Personnel, yeah. Yeah,
absolutely. So, well, older coaches, older people... Yeah. That are there. I mean, I feel like I mean, statistics are telling us that these young, healthy people are doing just so much better. I mean, the risks aren't as heavy for them. So are there? It's the carrying that they're trying to say, all right, let's bring that in. Everybody's talking about the athletes. What about the coaches, the staff, the support people that make up how all these universities are put together? Especially, I mean, just go on, do yourself a favor. Look on the sideline of a Ducks game. The athletes are... the minority.
This is what I found interesting is I reached out to some parents of players at you know, Pac-12 schools and asked them, because, you know, the parents are the ones that are going to be, you know, saying, hey, I want my kid to go back. I'm comfortable with my kid coming back. And I reached out to three of them and all of them got back to me and none of them said that they have a major concern because they trust the universities. They trust the university to take care of their kids, and they trust that there has been a measured approach, and it's going to be responsibly taken care of. Now, look, I just talked to three. Obviously, I don't know how many student athletes you said are each school. There's going to be some parents that are very concerned about it, but I talked to them, and they're like, hey, the way that these programs at Oregon and Oregon State have taken care of our sons to this point, I'm not really concerned about it because we know that their best interest is going to be taken care of. And when Larry Scott comes out and says that, that's something that the SEC hasn't said, the Big Ten, Big 12, ACC, they have not unveiled any sort of course of action. And I think it is refreshing that you do kind of have that element of, hey, we're going to be taking care of the athletes. We're not just going to send them back into something that, you know, is going to be pandemonium. Like, heck, there's some of the schools in the SEC, was it Arkansas, who's saying, we're not really going to test our guys all that much when they come back. We're just going to take care of the facilities and take care of yourselves. I mean, that's a scary proposition for a lot of parents out there, probably.
Could be. Might not be. I mean, now these universities are, every state is dealing, everybody's taking their own protocol. Mm-hmm. There's no universal protocol in college sports right now. We don't know. Nobody knows.
What we also don't know is when Major League Baseball is going to end their bickering. 7:15 on the Fan. Sing it, Cleland.
I don't need to. Sit back and enjoy it.
You were singing this earlier, so Buck decided to put the jams in.
I forgot what a jam this was. This might have to be in here permanently.
You remember the next time this song made its appearance in a very popular movie? Come on, guys.
No.
Ooh, I don't know.
Nope.
Come on. Come on. Think.
I mean, just the sound would indicate an era I could navigate towards, but I honestly don't know.
I mean, anybody that's a Transformer fan that's my age, it was in those times, they know when this scene popped up, when Rodimus Prime arrives and he changed into the leader of the Autobots because Optimus died.
Yeah. I didn't. Nope. Okay. I don't remember this song. I don't remember the song from Transformers.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I feel like I've let you down. I feel like I let you down.
It was in the movie. It was actually in the movie, in the feature film of that.
The cartoon Transformers.
Yes, the cartoon Transformers. Not the feature film of the movies of the 2000s and the 2010s.
Shouldn't they have incorporated this song in the newer Transformer movies?
It probably is just playing in the background somewhere, like a little Easter egg that they'd throw in.
Yeah, it should be. Like, at least end credits or something.
You know, that's something I'm not really good at, is, like, a lot of music in movies.
Okay, let me help you.
I don't do it. I'm not good at that.
You don't know when this song made its appearance again in a movie? Okay,
no,
a
I don't.
A feature movie. All right, let me help you out. Mark Wahlberg is in the movie. It was in the 90s.
With Transformers Again?
No.
Oh.
It was in the 90s. It had to do with Burt Reynolds.
I just saw, and now I remember.
You remember?
Boogie Nights.
Boogie Nights, when he's in the recording studio, this is the song he tries to cover and sell. It says, this is great!
Yeah. Also, don't remember that. Remember a lot of Boogie Nights.
I definitely remember.
I totally blew your guys' mind.
Yeah, when they thought that they were super talented, yeah.
I told you, I have trivia upon trivia knowledge about movies and stuff. When I hear something, it's crazy about a song, you can associate it with so many different things, you just remember it.
Yeah, I don't do that.
That is something I don't.
Music in movies, I really don't associate with, and I have no idea why.
Now, Cam, do you remember that between Transformers and Boogie Nights, it was also in a couple Jean-Claude Van Damme movies?
It was.
Both Kickboxer and Bloodsport.
Yes, it was. That's very good. Very, very good. Bloodsport.
This has been used in a lot of movies.
It's a massive karate. I like when karate. Just slow-moving karate kicks.
Dude, that guy, the bad guy in Bloodsport, terrified me. That was a scary dude. He was a bad dude. And Van Damme doing his splits in between chairs, though. That kicked ass.
That was good. Was his name Tong Po? If I remember correctly.
Sure. Sure. All right, we are here. And we're talking Major League Baseball. The posturing in the public eye is happening again, and the owners are going to try and lowball the players. We talked yesterday about the players' proposal that they countered to the owners, saying we want 140 games, fully prorated salaries. They're going to make a bunch of concessions like, hey, deferred payments if the postseason is canceled, and we'll wear mics and maybe do a home run derby and all-star game in the offseason. Well, the owners, according to Jeff Passan, are going to respond with potentially a low ball offer. They say, we see your 114 games and we will take our 82 game proposal and go back down to 50. That is going to be their response to this, as kind of the last ditch desperation effort is to get a 50 game season and fully prorated, according to ESPN's Jeff Passan.
I feel like I'm watching the negotiation of a used Buick.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it feels like. When did baseball turn into a used Buick? That's what it is. It started off, well, you don't get any salary. All right, 20%, 20 cents on the dollar. You guys get a dollar, we'll give you 20 cents. I picked this up at the auction, okay? Major League Baseball guys are like, hey, man, this is a beautiful car. It's a beautiful car. Wait, we want full price for it. Owner's like, nope, giving you 20 cents. 20 cents. Baseball players come back. 111 games, full salary. This is a beautiful car. Put new rims on it. I put an excellent 8-track in it. Come on. Come on, redid the interior. Owners come back. Nope, 50 games. Only giving you 50 cents on the dollar now. In fact, we're lowering our cost on it. What the hell?
Yeah.
How is baseball this? Come on, guys.
Well, this is what the owners are doing is exactly.
By
it's
the way,
the
Buick's
same,
not a bad car.
It's the same, but Tiger Woods drives one every day, right?
Not That's anymore,
his
daily.
Oh, no, no, no. Not
no,
his daily
no,
driver?
Nope, nope. Didn't make it on the bag. It's that, monster now.
That
a
seemed,
grandpa had a Buick Skylark.
That God, seemed Buick's so believable that Tiger Woods was driving Buicks everywhere when he was hawking that product, you know?
Well, you know, he's a dad. Buicks.
He probably
he's
had
a dad, not a
Buick.
Grandparent.
Wait, why are you shaming Buick?
Well, I'm not.
You're totally stereotyping Buick. Didn't you watch the commercials? That's a Buick.
Yeah.
That's not grandpa's car anymore.
Okay, how many young people do you know that drive a Buick? What? I'll say under the age of 50, how many Buick drivers do you know?
I don't know the statistics, but how many people can afford a brand new car?
Well, but Buicks are expensive because they are, like you said, they're a good car. A
General Motors car.
They are expensive though, and I don't know why, but you just don't see anybody young. I know their commercials are like,
looks like young people don't drive Cadillacs either. But Cadillac is, I mean, that's Cadillac. But
Cadillac has a luxury feel about it.
So do Buicks.
Do they?
Yes.
I don't think I like when I think of luxury vehicles, I don't think of Buick.
Huh.
They would be very far down. I see them as like an equal to, you know, as you said, their General Motors car. I see them as equal to like a Ford or a Chevy. I don't think of them as luxury.
Well, they're a General Motors product. So it's right along the same lines of what happened to Oldsmobile in the late 90s. Oldsmobile just faded away and kind of went, yeah, it's brand. Buick's, I don't know if Buick's on the world of fading away, but could be.
Yeah. Anyway. I think of grandparents or teenagers who get the grandparents' car, you know?
Yeah.
Like I knew a guy in high school, Buck said Buick Skylark. I know a guy who got his grandparents' Buick Skylark when they were done with it.
Beautiful car.
Yeah. It could move. But what it looked, the MLB owners, essentially, in your car analogy that we got sidetracked on, it's essentially by saying we are going 50 games, it's the same proposals they had before. They only want to pay 30% of the players' salaries. Because that the sliding scale pay for 82 games, that was 30% of original pay for the lowest paid players and more than 30% cut or more than 70% cut for the high paid players. They're saying we'll give you fully prorated salaries here, but we're only going to go 50 games, which is that 30%. But this time it's not just taking money out of the high earners' pockets. Now the $1 million players are getting even a bigger haircut, mm-hmm. you know? So it just doesn't it feel like this is going to end with 82 games fully prorated, and that's where the players are going to say, okay, half the season fully prorated, but the owners are just trying to lowball them again?
I don't know, man.
I think it is.
What do you think is going to happen? I'm looking at this as going, I hope the owners win at this point, just shut the season down so we can all just sit back and watch everybody squirm. If you really want to shut it down.
You're right.
You just want to shut it down, let's go full chaos. Just shut it down. Let's watch it. I argue with both sides because I can talk out of both sides of my mouth. I'm excellent at that. I think baseball contracts are redonkulous. I think they're stupid that you pay a guy 10 years out. You have no value what you know of the value of Mike Trout when he's 38 years, 39 years old. It is dumb. Those contracts are ludicrous, and they should be changed. You shouldn't have contracts longer than 5 years in baseball at the most. Doesn't make any sense to do that. Has no value, zero value in my mind. And owners on the other side should argue for a salary cap. Because salary cap would start to spread revenue and create more and more space because every other sport has caps and it still works very well. Why baseball doesn't want to do it is because they're the haves and the have-nots and they enjoy that. So if you want to make significant change, maybe this is one of those things that tear it down, start all over. And players, you want Garrett Cole, $325, $30 million? It just is dumb.
I've heard Scott Boras talk about why the contracts are like that. Why they're 10 years
in the loaded. Him money. Don't listen to Scott Boras. He can't justify it.
Well, no.
Because it benefits him for 40. It's like having a pension.
Right. But his justification and why it happens is that, all right, so Mike Trout, for example, making like, we'll just round it off here, making $30 million a year. Okay. And right now in Mike Trout's prime, Mike Trout is worth more than $30 million a year to the organization. What he produces from a revenue standpoint from the team, right? He brings in more than $30 million a year. So you're paying him for now in the back half of that contract, not for then. And that's why you have the 10-year deal. So it is less of a hit in the pocketbook right now. And so it's just saying, we know that Mike Trout, from 2017 through 2023, you are worth $50 million a year, but we're only going to pay you $30 so we can give you support around you. The Angels haven't done that, but they're saying that window right there is where the last from 2023 to 2026 or whatever his contract goes through, you're getting that extra money because we know you're worth more.
Well,
right
I think
now.
That's crazy because nobody knows what you're worth year in and year out. He could break his leg tomorrow. He could immediately decide, I don't feel like playing. You want to go be a weatherman. Garrett Cole could tear his UCL and then tear his shoulder mm-hmm. apart. His value is nothing in 2025.
But that so is that what is, his, that's the risk of business in any contract that you
that's
enter.
That's why I think that all sports, and I don't believe that this is a good idea, but it is the reality of sports, is you are a performance-based business, not a future-based business. All sports should be taught that way. 3 to 5 year contracts aren't what makes sense. 10 year contracts don't make logical sense because then you hamstring yourself up for years. If you think Mike Trout's worth $50 million in 2025, then wait till 2025 to pay him. What?
Well, that's not what it is. It's that he's worth $50 million now.
No, I understand what it is. I'm just saying is that those long-term deals, not one long-term deal that has been given to any of those players thus mm-hmm. far in Major League Baseball has paid off. Albert Pujols has not paid off. Okay, everybody that's in those long-term deals, Giancarlo Stanton had not paid off for Miami, did it? No, none of those things have done. Did Robbie Cano's long-term deal for the Mariners help at all? Did it do any value? Did it make it worth? No, it hamstrung. It got Jack Serengut fired, and it got all the Mariners gutted because of bad choices trying to buy yourself championships. It doesn't work. It hasn't worked yet, and it won't work.
But the idea is, in all of those scenarios that you pointed out, though, the team, you take that smaller number over 10 years as opposed to big numbers every single year. And the idea behind it is that the team will have money right now to pay other guys and back your entire roster, backload the entire roster right now. Instead of having three guys that are making $50 million this year, you can have, you know, six guys making 20 or whatever. Okay. And that is kind of the idea behind those teams and everything that you're saying is that, look, the Angels didn't do enough. The Mariners didn't do enough to build around them. And that's where they get caught in that bind. I agree with you, though. The 10-year contract, the players get put under the microscope in the back half of those contracts where it's like, oh, God, we're not paying this. This guy's a bum now. Well, he wasn't a bum when you signed into that mega deal, and that's where that money's supposed to be going to. And this is where the MLB's posturing is playing out in the public eye, is that it's no longer making the high earners upset. My question to you is, will this galvanize the players even more by saying, we're going to take away money from the low-end players? Because remember, that sliding scale it wasn't going to be as big of a hit for the guys making less than $1 million. Does this actually benefit the players if the owners come back over the top and say, we'll go fully prorated, but just for 50 games? 503-250-1080. Here's Buck with SportsCenter. Hey, coming up at the top of next hour, homeschool, Dr. Jeff Campbell. He's the food and beverage director at The Retreat, Sylvie's Valley Ranch. Golf course, resort. Great, great chef, Dr. Jeff Campbell. He's got a sourdough recipe that is legendary, over 100 years old. We'll talk to him. Homeschool, as you guys know, text us 503-250-1080. It's time we make you smarter about the things that are going on in the world since we're all teachers these days. So Dr. Jeff Campbell at 8 o'clock today. I asked you, Mr. Cleland, do you think that this will galvanize players a little bit more? Because they were already a united front when the owners proposed their next bout of salary reductions in their first proposal for an 82-game schedule. Now that the little guy isn't the one taking the hit now, do you think this will galvanize or separate the players more? Because the guys making under $1 million would have actually benefited in the initial proposal, but now they would take a hit under this current one. Where do you see this heading as far as the unified front for the players?
I think the players are going to stay unified. I don't think that's going to deviate. I think they look yeah. they look to the strength of who has the most, and there's not that many of them either. So it's very different than the NFL because the Major League Baseball understands this as it is a longevity sport. You can hang around for 10, 12 years. In fact, if you want to be a 20-year Crash Davis and playing the minors at $400 a month. There's plenty of guys that are like that, or it's they'll go
not,
to small leagues.
You're not wrong.
No, there's not a sense of urgency in baseball. Baseball is very calm. It's longevity. It's patience. There's no clock. And so you can't compare it to any other sport.
Do you feel like you're getting played here as a fan of baseball? By the way,
no, I know what you got.
By the way, Tony Clark of the MLBPA and Rob Manfred are negotiating publicly, essentially.
I think they chose to take it publicly because they're trying to use the public pressure. It's just like anything now. It's its own entity and its own arm that creates the animosity towards millionaires.
I do feel that this happens all the time in sports, and we should be used to it by now, but it doesn't feel like it's the right time to go through this kind of fighting. Because the NFL is having these kind of conversations, but behind closed doors on compensation if league revenues are down significantly. We've read about the NBA and their concerns, but we see Clay Bennett is saying we want all 30 teams back on the board of governors call. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't seem like, you know, they're trying to put pressure on fans to make a decision.
No, because the NFL doesn't need as much fans. I mean, they do. But they have the number one product, so they don't want to screw it up. They don't want to upset the fans. Baseball's trying to create change, and for some reason they're trying to hold on to their old ideals and trying to fight through it. So they're both at a controversy. I think both sides are at a controversy because the players have never been put in a situation where they got to feel like they got to give up and lose so much. They don't. And the owners sit back and go, well, we control all the power. We don't need you guys. We'll just find more guys to do it. Oh, really? Yeah, they're having a tough time. I mean, Major League Baseball is along the lines of college football. They're just trying to figure out what's the right way to do it, and they need to inject change. Best they can. NFL's got, I mean, they just got it on lockdown right now. They are the cruise control. Everything they do is smart. Everything they do is progressive. They try to make change. They adjust. They're willing to go. All right, we'll put this rule in. Oh, it didn't work. No, we'll fix that. That's no problem. We'll make the mistake. The rigidity of baseball and the rigidity of college football is embarrassing at this point. And that's why they're having the hardest problems.
Yeah, football at times seems reactionary and kind of goes over the top, but that is it's not necessarily a bad thing because in the grand scheme of things, you're talking about, we need to change that. They go and do it, pass interference, change right? Saints got screwed in the NFC Championship game. We got to change this PI rule. Well, that didn't work. It's gone. It's gone. And there's like no sweat off our back. It'll be okay. All these other sports, there is an element of there is a fear of what are we going to upset our fans too much? I think the NFL is saying, hey, these fans are going to be here no matter what.
Yeah, they don't care. They're like, NFL's like Apple. They just tell you if you need a new update, they're just going to put an update on your phone. They're not going to give you the opportunity to make injection of what the update's going to be. They're going to give you the update, and you're going to like it. And if you don't like it, you're going to be like, oh, well, I guess I'll buy an Android.
I just wish college football had a little bit of that. We don't care what you think. We're going to do it.
Well, they do. That's called the SEC.
Well, but they can't change a rule.
Well, the SEC doesn't need to change the rule. They are the rules. They're like, yep, we're going to do this. We're going to have 8 conference games. Okay, we're going to pay our coaches this. We're going to recruit this. We're going to have 10. You know what we're going to do? We're just going to take all your money. You know what we're going to do? We're going to throw out CBS and ESPN's going to overpay us. We're just going to do what we want. We're going to start practices. I'm just looking at my friends that are coaches in Florida right now, high school football coaches, just started their camps. Hundreds of kids running around in the stands, taking I'm looking right at it on social media, and guys are high school coaches that I know, former NFL players that are coaching high schools, are like, hey, we're back to normal doing things. Things are different. They do whatever they want. Baseball, and we look at all these different types of rules that everybody's trying to operate by. The NFL operates by one rule. We will do what we want.
It'd be great, though, if the rest of college football would say, this is how we catch up. And saying, you know what, SEC, we have 4 other conferences here, and we want to expand the playoff. We're going to make a push for it, and we're going to get this thing done. Like, that change is something I don't understand. That is one that, and look, the SEC was, at the beginning of this, they were one of the biggest opponents of name, image, and likeness. And then somebody got in their ear and said, guys, even fewer people will leave the SEC footprint if this happens. They went, oh, okay, we're on.
Let me help you with this. Originally, I thought college football was progressive and could move with the ebbs and flows. The longer I've started to pay attention to it, along with baseball, it's like trying to turn around the Queen Mary.
What's the Queen Mary? Is that a big ship?
It's a big boat, and it's docked. Do you think they're turning that thing around? No.
Nope.
Nope. They've docked it. This is what we do.
True that. There's nothing wrong with what you're saying right there. Because
but eventually, guess what all boats
football
do?
Sink?
Yes, they do.
Take this bad boy out of the water. Roger Goodell got played like a fiddle. Dusty and Cam on the Fan. I wish I was like 6'9" so I can get with you. We had a lot going on yesterday. I didn't get to a story that popped up on Friday. But it, boy oh boy, Roger Goodell got played like a fiddle. And you mentioned all the great things that the NFL does to just be like, you know what? We do what we want. This is how we do it. But one facet of that is, that they cannot figure out is Barstool Sports. Because Roger Goodell got played.
Did he?
By Dave Portnoy, the president of Barstool. Oh. Yeah. Yeah, he did.
Sure. Share with me. I know this whole story, but I'm quite interested in why you think Roger Goodell got played.
Portnoy won an auction for $250,000 as part of the, what was the all-in?
The all-in challenge.
Yeah, the all-in challenge, mm-hmm. the auctions and yep. raffles that they did with yep. great
all
sports packages. And Portnoy, the founder of Barstool Sports, paid $250,000 to watch a Monday night football game with Roger Goodell in Roger Goodell's basement where he did the draft from. And that's a ton of dough. And if you remember, Barstool had their credentials revoked from anything NFL. So draft, combine, the Super Bowl, Pro Bowl, you name it, Barstool can't go because Portnoy is a Boston guy, and Barstool started as a Boston website, and they did a sit-in at NFL headquarters where they got like arrested and taken out of there during Deflategate and all that stuff. And Portnoy has always like been an agitator to the NFL, and this is where I think he got played, where Goodell got played.
Well, Portnoy also got himself physically removed from the Super Bowl two years ago.
As he was hiding in disguise.
That's right. He wore a fake mustache.
But they literally dragged him out. There's video of his legs dragging behind.
I know. I thought it was hilarious.
So it was. It was. But this is where, you know, Goodell gets played is that he puts this up for auction. Portnoy's got deep pockets, so he goes and does this, okay? We all knew Goodell, there'd be an element of he's not going to do it. And that's Dave Portnoy absolutely loves that idea because of the fact that Roger Goodell, if he just sits there and he goes, okay, I'm going to play along with it and I'm going to make this thing happen. He could have had a situation where, you know, Portnoy wanted to like live tweet it. He wanted to dress him down, you know, make it uncomfortable. But Goodell could have said, if you're coming to my house and you're coming to my basement, no cameras, no phones. You and I will just watch a game. We'll take a couple pictures before. We'll take a couple pictures after. But you and I are going to sit and we're going to watch a game on this and, you know, make him sign an NDA, for goodness sakes. And if Portnoy doesn't want to do that, then, hey, that's on him, not on me. Instead, Goodell went and found fine print in the agreement and said Portnoy didn't pass a background check. But we know exactly why Goodell didn't want to do this is because he didn't want to be pestered and he didn't want to be a headline story for Barstool Sports for Dave Portnoy to get more attention.
Okay. He also didn't need a background check to know that the guy got arrested in his own office.
Yeah. Right. Or the longstanding beef he has with him.
So what's the big deal? I mean, so is it the fact that he should have got, you think he should have gone through with it?
Yeah, he could. There are ways that he could have done it.
Why?
I just said he could have had him sign an NDA, had stipulations that look,
if you don't,
you
like
don't get
the
to
guy,
live
you don't
tweet
want
it.
To sit next to the guy and watch a game with you. You're like, I don't want to do it.
But here is where he gets played because Goodell says, fine, I'm not going to do it. I don't have to do it. And you didn't pass the fine print. Now Portnoy can come back and he says, Goodell doesn't like charity. He doesn't like kids. He doesn't want to help people. He said, why? Because they're afraid of me. They're afraid of the brain, and they're not going to have some fun with it. So blank you, Roger Goodell. By the way, don't do charities and let the guy win who you don't want to win it. That's on you. And so he, Portnoy is actually getting just as much attention out of this, which is what he wanted, and just as many clicks, as if Goodell would have just gone along with it and said, you don't get to live tweet it, you don't get to, you know, live stream it, you have to sign an NDA, and that's it. You just get to have the experience with it.
And now the publicity is free for Barstool because they don't have to pay the $250,000.
Exactly. And the NFL is ponying up the $250,000 to the charity instead to get out of it.
I think it's right on brand for both guys, so I think it's perfect. I think Roger Goodell's on brand, tough, not going to stand or in, not going to listen to those guys, not going to make sure that's that. I mean, if it's about money, it wasn't about, this had nothing to do with money. This had nothing to do with, this was just, this was Barstool trying to do Barstool, trying to get their way, and they got both that. And you think Roger Goodell's going to let those guys do that and get him? No.
But
they're on brand for both.
He was trying to cultivate that, hey, I can take heat. I can take criticisms during the draft. The boo Goodell feature that they had, and you know, chest bumping virtually on his TV screen in his basement. Wouldn't it have been like a, you know what? Goodell can take it if he would have allowed Portnoy to go there.
But he's not that guy. He's never been that guy. You think he's just suddenly gonna?
Well, no, but that's what I'm saying. He's trying to make his image a little bit different by doing the things that he did during the draft.
Oh, I don't think he's trying to make his image any different. I think that's just who he is. He's no different. He's no different.
Well, then why would you do the whole he did chest bump and the boomy thing? Because he wanted people to be like, hey, I can play along with it.
Yeah, he's just
yeah, that's what it is.
Doing the best he can with that. He doesn't like Dave Portnoy and Bar. I love a good good fight. Don't like somebody. I like that. No matter what. If it was $1 billion, right? Nope, not going to do it. I like that. I like the fact that he's not just like coming to the pressure. Well, it's Barstool, and for the right thing, we'll do. No, man. He's like, screw these guys. They're not going to get into my league. This is my league. Get out of here.
And
get
that out of here.
I love that.
And that is where Goodell got played, because Portnoy knew he wouldn't do it. He knew it all along. And he bid $250,000, knowing that, all right, so if I have to pay the $250,000, I get content. Mm-hmm. If he doesn't do it, I still get content because he's not going to do it, and I won't have to pay that $250,000.
I tell you what, I've really softened on Roger Goodell over this last few years, at least the last couple years. Been very impressed with what he's been able to do, and whether the perception is if you like him or not, that's not what I was saying. Is just what he's done for the league and how he's elevated this league. I mean, I was under the Paul Tagliabue run, and I know we had a big change, and there was a hard lines and some of the things that you had to gavel, but he's changed those rules in the next negotiation. He said, look, you guys wanted to give me those powers, I'll take them. He gave them back. He didn't have to argue for that. They tried to fight for that. They said, no, we want that. He's elevated the league. They stood fast. They've made change. They're still the best in the league of all the sports. He's done. He's given up his salary this year. As much as you want to say that it's $33 million. He's like, look, done. Here you go. So if you want to say he's been played, all right. I still tend to think that I'm going to side with the Shield and Roger Goodell. I think Barstool will be gone way before the NFL.
Well, yeah, but that
laugh
is...
Laugh your way down, laugh at whatever you want to say. And I like Dave Portnoy. I'm a fan of those guys. I love his pizza reviews. It's good content, but it doesn't... It's like, you didn't play anybody.
Oh, I disagree with that because of the fact that it was was right into what Portnoy... It was a win-win for Portnoy, and there was a way for Goodell to...
Shock media.
Ease the blow... Yeah. Of it all. And that is, he just seems like a guy that continually, he just can't play along with it. And
he doesn't play well with others.
Move.
That's true.
It is a genius move. And I don't disagree with you with what Roger Goodell has done for the league, but in order for him to give up his judge, jury, and executioner on NFL matters, the players had to give up some stuff too.
Sure. That's why it's called a negotiation.
And that's why he's a good businessman, and he won it all, but that there has been a fractured relationship with the players. But as you said, under Paul Tagliabue, it's not like it's been great anyway. Not every league can be the NBA with Adam Silver. You know, not every league is going to operate in that way. And Goodell knows he can't operate the NFL that way, and he doesn't.
Yeah,
and to that, I give him a ton of credit. But if he wanted to really change his image, I think he could. I think he could in a big way. But it ain't going to be this one. So $250,000 still going to all the charities. All of them. Coming up next hour, some NFL chatter Deshaun Jackson, what he's looking for. And is Henry Ruggs III the best friend? But next, we go homeschool. Dr. Jeff Campbell, food and beverage director, the resort at Sylvie's Valley Ranch. Get your questions in. You ever wanted to ask a great chef some questions about his process? We'll have Dr. Campbell on next. Dusty and Cam on the Fan.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.